We are Things I Found Online.
Yay!
And today we offer you an intersection of broadcasters. Ryan Tabb is fresh out of college and beginning his radio career in Lincoln, Nebraska. David H. Lawrence, the 17th, is a radio legend and voiceover renaissance man who was moved into acting and entrepreneurship. I am Jamie Alcroft here with Danny Mann, our producer, Dina Friedman, and our host, Louise Palenka.
Thank you. The backyard goes wild. And I must ask, how is everyone safe, I trust, from viruses and hornets?
Doing my best.
Not necessarily in that order, yes.
But Danny, you said that this is a full news week and that you were going to give us a recap.
This is, well, Jamie has to help me here because there just like so much stuff happened all at once. It's hard to know where to look. And it's not the usual stuff of numbers and Trump saying odd stuff. It's just starting with, of course, the killer hornets. Like there wasn't enough to worry about with virus. We are now being afraid of these killer murder hornets.
Murder hornets. That's different than killer hornets.
It depends on their lawyer, I think.
There's a big difference. Yeah, the manslaughter hornets, not so bad.
Who's doing their PR?
Hornets get better lawyers because they're all wasps.
And the assault and battery hornets, nothing to worry about there.
Nah, and the jaywalking hornets, no one hears about at all.
Nobody. Nobody's ever afraid of them. But, you know, what we have basically is plague and pestilence for the first time in my lifetime.
Right.
They've coalesced.
And what could make you feel more calm about a killer hornet than a lovely, beautiful Buddhist monk who's got a beetle fetish? And this YouTube video was my second favorite funny thing of the week. And we've all heard beetle covers before, but I've never heard one like this. And you get to meditate at the end of it. So what, you know, how bad could that be?
It's really great. He's got all the instruments there, but, and I must say, I watched it and I watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of better because you know the song. So it's kind of better if you just kind of click forward a little bit on that puppy.
All I could think of when I was watching it was, oh, it's lingo, which I don't mean in any derogatory way, but just, and the guy just looks like a hoot. I mean, I'd love to party with this guy.
Yeah.
But the funniest thing I've seen in ages this week is somebody took a horse race, a video of a horse race, and just named all the horses different things that are going on in the news, and then did it as a race commentary, and it slayed me. And
it was social distancing at the rail. Wear a facial mask coming around the bend.
There's a British version of it now, and it's like it's.
Oh,
now,
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now it's right. Every country wants its own now.
Oh, Jim Cummings did a Winnie the Pooh version of it, apparently.
I don't think I got to read for that.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
So, and a big week for holidays because yesterday, the 4th of May, nobody thinks there's anything, but years ago it got created as Star Wars Day. And their nickname, of course, is May the 4th be with you.
Yeah.
Which sounds like you've got a speech defect, but
And that is send in the memes.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that is
send in the memes. Truly, and look at this, all of them.
And the Prime Minister, somebody in Holland sent something to, what's her name? The first female Prime Minister of England, Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah. And sent her like a telegram saying, May the 4th be with you. And then it caught on and all the Star Wars geeks got in and now it's a thing and it's recognized worldwide.
Well,
and of course today,
here we are now, Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, and you know what baffles me every year is why Cinco de Mayo is always on May 5th.
Well,
I go around asking people that.
I
asked a sales girl that one day.
I think Trump could probably explain it. As we all know, it commemorates those wonderful doctors and nurses that lost their lives when the German torpedoes hit the Mayo Clinic in World War II, and that's why we celebrate.
Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo. Yeah. Gotcha. But you know what? Actually, a lot of people think it's not Mexican Independence Day. A lot of people think it is.
No, it's not.
And it's celebrated more in the States than it is in Mexico.
And it's not celebrated in France because it was the day Mexico defeated France.
Right.
So it's kind of like Taco Bell. It's our version of what's Mexican.
But it's celebrated by Mexicans here, but it's just more of a heritage and cultural thing rather than, than a specific, because it was like a minor battle that actually is commemorated. Then we've got the kid who tried to run away from home at age five.
Oh, the Lamborghini kid?
Yeah, did any of you try and run away from home when you were kids?
Not like this kid.
Like a neighbor and I, this girl next door and I, we got on our tricycles and I think we got like six blocks away and they found us and we were 3 years old and, you know, we got yelled at or whatever. But this kid took a car, his family car, but with the best excuse on the planet. He wasn't happy with the family car. He was driving to California so he could get a Lamborghini.
Yes.
I never dreamt of such
an SUV. How can that be possible?
And he had $3 on him. Yeah, I guess he was going to talk them down.
I just can't believe he could see over the steering wheel enough to get this thing on the interstate before he got pulled over.
I know. It was incredible.
I think in Utah, they still have phone directories, so he was sitting on those, maybe.
I think he deserves that. Well, his plan was, with $3, he was going to stop in Vegas.
Oh.
He was going to play the tables for a few days.
Yeah, his gift.
Then he was going to go to L.A. and buy his Lamborghini.
His gift is that he can count cards. He's the Rain Man of his preschool. So
maybe he had some ring lights in the back that he was going to sell because those are gone.
Hey, your ring lights look beautiful today, by the way, Louise.
Yeah, I'm. Thank you. Hopefully, it's an evanescent glow that is being achieved in this Zoom conference that we all aspire towards. Yep. Danny, I want to hear about your Zoom call with 44 cousins. Like, what?
So a couple of weeks ago, we organized a Zoom call at my request. I kind of put it together of all my first cousins. So there's 15 of us. And then my eldest cousin said, I'd like to see all of their kids. So we invited them all. We didn't get everybody, but we had 44 first cousins and first cousins once removed and second cousins. And in 15 different cities around North America, which was pretty good, including Yellowknife in the Northwest Territory. So
that fantastic.
It was pretty awesome. And our family's a lot like Louise's. I mean, she's done 112 episodes of this thing and has never not had a relative on. So our family's not that big, but we're close. I could give you a run for your money.
All right. Well, today we are joined by our guest sportscaster, Ryan Tabb from KNTK 93.7, The Ticket FM in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yay, Ryan.
Co-hosts The Drive, a daily sports talk show on The Ticket FM, Monday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Ryan grew up as a baby panelist on my earlier podcast, Journals Out Loud. Ryan fans can find hundreds of episodes online on YouTube. Ryan, let's begin with the very basic question. What does a sportscaster talk about in a world without sports, more specifically for you, in a Lincoln, Nebraska with no sports?
Yeah, that's definitely been a challenge, I think, for everybody in the business. For me particularly, I'm only on the job for 4 months now, and so I was just getting settled in right
now. Oh, man.
It's thrown a wrench into everything. But we're trying to keep things entertaining, and so it doesn't necessarily have to be sports right now. We'll go down any rabbit hole, movie, TV, pop culture, you name it. But ultimately, we're trying to come up with the most evergreen sports content we can. So whatever we would have otherwise talked about in the off season, we're doing it now. And anything that gets us through.
Are you going to the Lincoln, Nebraska long distance croquet tournaments and so forth, where people keep their social distance and play croquet?
One more time. Sorry, I didn't catch the end of that.
They play croquet.
They keep
social distance playing croquet.
I didn't know that.
It's a perfect game.
Not doing game for it, unfortunately. But, it's a college town up here. It's a big town to be a college town. It's about 300,000 people. But the only major sports team in the entire state is the University of Nebraska. Right. And so everybody comes together for those kinds of events. And spring practice got canceled. We had a lot of coverage lined up for that. So things have been thrown off, but every day is kind of a new challenge. And like we've talked about murder hornets and we talked about the kid in the Lamborghini. Anything?
See?
Yeah.
You can't get away from them.
Hey, now, do you place odds on all of these stories?
What's that?
I'm sorry.
Do you place odds on all these stories or? Like, how do you sporterize your basic news story so that there's something to root for?
Well, that's the thing. We've stopped trying to make everything about sports. And
right.
I sent you that article. There was a really interesting article out on The Ringer, which is a pretty big pop culture sports website, about how a lot of sportscasters have become kind of, well, they say grief counselors, but a forum for communities to come together and talk about their experiences and call in and say, this is how it's in my life. We've gone the complete opposite direction. We've stopped trying to be all about sports. We're not trying to play the game of make this bigger than it is and remind everybody all the time. You know, it's a really important thing that's happening in the world, and we're hoping to be a bit of a break from that because it's hard to get away from.
I'm just curious about one thing. When this first started, when sports still was in the conversation somewhat, most of the sports shows I heard at some point, they were all offering conjecture on how the season, if we come back, what will the format be? How will it work? Did you go through those machinations about here's what hockey could look like, here's what basketball will do, it'll be short and yada yada?
Yeah, so that was a big deal right before everything got canceled. We did all that and we're still doing it because there's new ideas and new news about that every day. There was some news about college football potentially having a shortened season that we talked about today, and we're going to do more on that tomorrow. But the funny thing for me is I'm very much a believer in the scientific method, and I defer to the professionals. And so it was weird for me to be giving my opinion and all the while wanting to make it as clear as possible that I have a journalism degree and I have never studied infectious diseases, and any guesses of mine are as good as anybody else's, just who's a random person, but we should be deferring to experts. And so it was tough to balance being an entertainer and also just admitting that I don't know what I'm talking about on this topic. I really don't.
You have a lot in common with some leaders.
Yes.
Now, Ryan, are you broadcasting from home? Are you going into work? How are you guys arranging this safely?
We've been really lucky out here, actually. We've got some of the fewest cases in the country, probably not by any product of legislation or rules, but just by population density being really low.
More corn than COVID.
What's that?
More Nebraska, colon, more corn than COVID.
There's your t-shirt. There's the t-shirt.
Right here. And so we've been lucky. It hasn't been that bad out here. For about a month and a half, my co-host was working from home. He lives a little further away from the station than I do. So I would go sit in the station by myself. He'd be on the tie line remotely, and we'd broadcast together. As of this week, he came back into the studio. We're sanitizing all the microphone covers.
I was just going to say.
Yeah. We're sitting 6 feet apart, yeah. And we're doing our best.
And what are you hearing from listeners? What do they want to talk about? Do you guys have it pretty much right that they don't want to talk about COVID? They want to talk about anything else?
I think our listeners, at least, you know, I can't speak for everyone else around the country, but our listeners are really receptive to what we're doing. They've reached out and told us that we give them a release from the reality that we're all dealing with, and a lot of people who are, you know, suffering, being laid off and sicknesses in their family. It's nice to be able to take your mind off of that. So we're trying to continue to give that to them, but there's no formula here. It's really unprecedented. And so,
and if I may say so, Ryan, knowing you quite well, you are the man for this moment because you are so well-rounded and you do have so many interests and you can't speak intelligently about all of them. So when this came at you, I think you were just kind of like, I got this.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been interesting for me to be able to pursue other topics. At times, when you're in any specific talk show format, whether it's politics or pop culture or sports in my case, I think there gets to be a point where you're on topic number 50 of the day in sports and you haven't addressed public interest topic number one or movie topic number one. And so now it's given us an opportunity to branch off into that, which I like, as you said, I like talking about everything. So
yeah, it's public service. You're performing a public service, which is really great.
There's also, if I may, there's also a nice side street to sports anyway. And I know this mostly from hockey, but with social media, with TV and everything else, we've gotten to know the players and their families and all these backstories so well that when this hit and they were starting to interview and show the players at home, et cetera, it opened the doors to that kind of dialogue.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we've been looking for the silver linings in finding the more interesting, more compelling stories throughout this. And I think actually something that's getting overlooked is there's a lot of reform that's been necessary in a lot of different levels of sports. And this has thrown everyone for such a turn that some of it's happening almost by force. A lot of leagues have had their hands forced at accommodating some of the necessary things and maybe discovering better methods of doing things. One example, the NFL draft, annually one of the most boring events ever. People look forward to it because there's news, but the production itself is incredibly boring. Well, this year everything was done remotely from home. Every mm-hmm. general manager was sitting in their living room with their kids around.
I heard about that. So that was good?
It wasn't high production value, but it was authentic. And it was awesome. Everybody loved it. Positive reception across the board. It's forced their hand at finding new interesting way to do things. And it's actually a pretty good thing to come out of all this. Is they'll probably stick with a similar format going forward.
And what's interesting is we're just barely able to have enough bandwidth to handle this, where you can turn on your computer and suddenly be live from your home. I've been watching American Idol, how they're doing it. They like sent every kid a ring light and they're using their phone. It seems like they have three shots. They maybe sent each kid two cameras and they've set up their phone and they're cutting in between shots and everyone's created a little cozy corner and whatever decorative they can find around the house. And you get to see their families cheering and holding up signs on the lawn. And so there's just mm-hmm. something about this, I think, that we'll probably bring forward with us into the future, even when we can return to normal.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, 20 years ago, we couldn't do this way. This podcast couldn't exist over Zoom.
Right.
We didn't have this.
Really, we didn't have the bandwidth for it.
It's great. It coincided, which segues beautifully into David being here, doesn't it?
Oh, David's here?
Yeah.
Hold on.
I guess I am.
You I got see the nicest
background of anybody, by the way. It looks like a professional photo shoot.
It's funny you should notice, Brian.
There we go.
Because we would like to welcome David H. Lawrence, the 17th.
Hey, everybody.
Do you have portraits of the previous 16 David H. Lawrences lining a hallway in your home?
I would just like to remind you, Louise, we are all in show business, mm-hmm. and perhaps the 17th isn't entirely true. I'm just saying.
Actually going back and forth in my mind. And as I said it out loud to my husband, he said, that's not even possible.
Well, it is possible, but mm-hmm. entirely unlikely given my sex life. So,
Well, I was going to ask you if that David H. Lawrence 17th was a family name.
Well, if it was real, it would be a family name, but no, okay. When I had to choose my, SAG name about, I don't know, 18 years ago, there was no variant on my name available. And I'm staring at my IMDb page, and in Roman numerals after my name is 17, because I was the 17th David Lawrence on IMDb.
Fantastic.
And I'm on the phone with SAG after, at the time it was SAG, and I'm talking to the woman who is completely uninterested in helping me find a name. And she's interested in telling me, no, you can't have that one.
Right.
I'm looking at my name, and I go, how about David H. Lawrence the 17th? And she goes, beautiful, and she hangs up on me.
That's so great. It's like, we Lawrences are good at counting.
That's right. Exactly. We're good at math.
All right. Here comes your introduction. Hold that thought. David is a voice actor who began his career in radio in the 80s, then got into podcasting early on in the 90s and produced comedy bits for radio stations. From there, he moved into acting and voice acting. David has created a video course on Zoom for teachers. His course is called Teach Your Course Online. David, can you rattle off some of the radio stations where you have worked and some of the acting roles that make you the most proud?
Well, let me take the last one first. Most people know me as one of the creepy evil villains on Heroes, and that certainly was a life-changing experience. It was the first job I ever booked, and it ended up being a 3-year run on arguably one of the most seminal science fiction shows ever on television.
That's
highest
great.
Rated, most money spent per episode, crazy. Got to work with people like Zach Quinto and Hayden Panettiere and so on. In terms of radio, my first job was at WNCI in Columbus, Ohio, which was the Kiss FM of its day, for sure. But it was early enough in radio's development that one of their taglines was, we're FM. We don't fade out under bridges. So, and from there, I worked in Top 10 Radio. I worked at PLJ for a while. I worked at Q107 for a while. Ended up working, doing syndicated radio for the last 12, 13 years of my career. And then radio, of course, as you know, is like a great big old cesspool to work in these days. I was on XM and Sirius when they were separate entities. Was an anchor for CNET and CBS. And then I decided that with this gorgeous face and this amazing physique, I would find out whether or not Hollywood wanted me as an on-camera actor. And that's what I did.
Now, do you have any career advice for young Ryan? I don't know how much of his portion of the show you heard, but he's starting out. He grew up here in California, in Los Angeles. He's been on podcasts with me since he was 15. Mm-hmm. So he's got a lot of experience, but he got his first broadcasting job in sports in Lincoln, Nebraska, where he currently is in Lincoln, Nebraska, with no sports.
Yep. Well, so, you know, sports is great. I mean, I remember doing play-by-play in college, and, you know, we could do it right now, couldn't we, Brian? Ryan. We could do it together. We'll take Louise is our athlete, and her podcasting is the game, right? So, Palanker, 18-year veteran of the broadcast game, sizes up the back of the chair, sits one earbud on the left, one earbud on the right. And just like that, we are off and running with episode number 750 of The Things I Found Online. Ryan?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm terrible at play-by-play.
Great.
Totally frank. Oh, well,
who's going to be the color?
Take it away, Danny.
You know, a lot of people don't know this, but Louise emanates from Buffalo, which, as many people know, provides Toronto with most of its snow. And she has relatives pretty much everywhere there is snow. Back to you.
I noticed the RE20 is missing. New sponsor for Palanker. She's using the Sennheiser 418. I don't know what the first question is going to be, but I'm sure it's going to be huge. Let's watch what happens as this unfolds on the field before us.
Okay, let's talk about Teach Your Course Online. Was it
very well done?
That sucked so bad. Let's move on to something else. Okay.
No, I thought that was wonderful.
I love that.
Yeah,
was it,
Danny?
Was it only inspired by the shutdown, or are you just so uniquely qualified to teach this set of skills to teachers that you were going to do it anyway?
Yes. Well, I'm developing a course. I've been teaching voiceover for about 12 years. And when I started doing on camera, people were like, are you going to do an on camera class as well? So I've been developing a course called Camera Ready You. And at the time the whole COVID thing happened, my girlfriend had a coaching partner who was a teacher in South Carolina who was just sent home by her school system. They closed the schools like they did everywhere else. And they basically said, you know, just keep teaching at home, online. And no support, no here's how to do it, here's a course, nothing. And she was really sad about it. You know, that she missed her kids. She didn't know what to do. She didn't know where to do it. She didn't know how to set up her lights and her camera and her microphone. And Betsy said, you know, you have all those things you're working on for Camera Ready You. Are some of them ready that you can, you know, customize it for teachers? And I thought, yeah, I got nothing else to do. So I spent the last month and a half putting the course together. And currently, just this morning, we went over 1,000 teachers taking the course.
Fantastic. And
yeah, it's really cool. Fantastic. So there's the course right there.
So I signed up. I had like one more day to get in there for free, David.
No, hold on.
Okay,
I extended it. It's not May 6th anymore. I don't know if you read that in the stuff, but this week is National PTA's Teacher Appreciation Week, so I figured I'll go this week and next week, and then I'll start charging the princely sum of $49 for it.
Well, but I just want you to know that I signed up yesterday doing research for this show today, mm-hmm. and since I and Jamie and Danny and Ryan are all – and Dina are all broadcasting from home now.
Yep.
And in addition to this show, I do a little show that I call Quarantainment. It's like a little 15-minute show about what I've been watching or reading that week because we're all
very good. It's very good, Louise.
But I'll go on Amazon and I'll buy a ring light and then
that's your first mistake.
Right. And then I'll go on Amazon and I'll see someone say, no, you don't want a ring light. You want this light. And anyway, long story short, I watched your video on lighting yesterday because I was especially interested because, you know, people say that window light is the best, but it keeps changing. And sure. I was lost. I learned so much because I've heard all these terms, key light, fill light. And I watched your lighting video and I thought, I need to tell everyone today, whether or not you're a teacher, we're all now broadcasters. Sign up for David's class. There's so much that each of us can learn now because for the next however long,
sure,
even if it's just a family vid chat, it's nice to look nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And in your case, as soon as we get rid of that ring light, you'll stop having those goggles on your glasses.
Well,
you know, the little rings that show up that ring your eyes. We want to see your beautiful eyes.
Yeah, no, I can see them in people's pupils on TV.
Yeah.
So I sent away, after watching your lighting video, I sent away for a lighting kit, the one that you recommend. The problem with everyone is like, oh, I don't have room. That desk is a built-in and there's cupboards above it and then there's not a window. So we all have all of these. Danny keeps moving as the light changes. You know, he's got it on his phone.
I have not moved in four hours for you.
I'm just making the point that everyone has a unique set of circumstances. So why don't you look at each of our screens, David, and give us a little feedback.
Yeah.
So Danny, right off the bat, raise the phone up so that you're shooting straight at your eyes rather than looking down at it, because no one wants to see your nose hairs. I don't know you. I like you already, but nose hairs, not for me.
Oh, right, so
wait, just point of fact, don't trim nose hairs right now. They help protect you from COVID.
Correct.
See?
So raise your phone.
So raise your phone up to eye level. There you go. Now
See,
there you go.
See the mirror, that there's a nice little frame thing going back.
Well, that was the second thing is, you know, change from a mirror to a painting rather than, you know, nice frame, looks great. Love that you're a Leafs fan.
Joey, bring the Van Gogh in. Yeah, strike the mirror, bring the Van Gogh in. I've got a crew.
There you go.
All right.
Okay.
I never realized that was a mirror.
James, yes. With you, I would take a little lens wipe. Clean your lens. It looks like you've been holding whatever camera you're using up to your makeup-laden face for the last 5 years.
David, he's out of focus in person.
Okay. All right. Well, in that case, fine.
No, that was a good tip.
Clean. Ryan, your framing, you got an awful lot of headroom here, buddy. So, you know, you should have like a golf ball on top of your head. There you go. Perfect.
That's Jamie's department.
Yeah. And then Dina, same with you. You got a lot of headroom going on there with your camera. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. A little bit more. You got about, yeah, there you go. I'm looking at the little thumbnail, so I can't tell really much. And Louise, as usual, you're perfect.
Wow.
Oh, what a browner.
Mm. I watched 3 tutorials yesterday, David, so I'm
pretty, great. Pretty
good. So how did you go about creating your syllabus when you decided I'm going to go ahead and do this? Because I do have to note, everything David does has a really polished, professional look to it. So I know you put a lot of thought behind this. So how did you create your syllabus and how did you go about knowing not just what broadcasters would need, but what will teachers need specifically to be interacting with students?
Well, first of all, I talked to a lot of teachers and I said, what do you need? What are you looking for? And I think it's a step that most people who create online courses totally fail at. They think, oh, I know how to put together a course. I'll do a course. It's fine. I know what I'm doing. I know what people need. I know what they want. And when you're trying to, for example, sell a course online, you should take the time to get to know what your audience actually needs as opposed to what you think they need or what you think they want. And one of the really great pieces of advice I got as I was building the course from a psychology professor at Berkeley was, don't make teachers feel bad about what they have. You know, show them how to use what they've got and get the most out of that. Don't try to get them to buy everything possible. They don't have the money to begin with. And there are so many things you can do just with what you have. So that's part of it. And then the other part of it is there's some givens when it comes to getting set up. I mean, this is the set that I use when I do self-tapes when I'm auditioning. So, you know, there's some things that you absolutely have to have. But then turning around and kind of shaping it for the teaching community, talking about things that I probably wouldn't talk about, like you know, how to use a whiteboard. No actor needs to know how to use a whiteboard, but teachers do. And so there's an episode, or there's a lesson later in the course on how to use Zoom with an electronic whiteboard. And Ryan would already be diagramming your podcast if he was any good at play-by-play, but he's already admitted he's not. So, but that's, you know.
More of a color man.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of which, I just was thinking about this morning when I saw he was going to be on. I remembered when I was shooting a couple of episodes of the show Lost, I was in Hawaii. And this big, burly native Hawaiian was my driver. And we were in the van. We were listening to a University of Hawaii, University of Montana, I think it was, football game. And it was Saturday afternoon. And the guy that was doing the play-by-play and his partner were fantastic. And I just casually said to this driver, man, that color guy is really good. And he says, what do you say, brother?
Uh-oh.
Oh.
You say color guy?
Uh-oh.
I'm like, okay, wait, hold on. And he pulled the van over to the side of the road. Like, I'm going to lose my life because he couldn't hear the fact that I didn't say a D at the end of color. Mm-hmm. And I explained to him what a color guy is versus a play-by-play guy. And he, I thought I was going to lose my life that day.
Yes.
So, obviously, he bought it because you're here.
Yeah.
Barely.
Yeah, and you said, sir, I'm not a racist on paper.
No. And for the whole time I was there, for a week and a half shooting these episodes. And I mean, he was giving me the side eye the whole time. Say one more racist thing. I dare you.
Good morning. Good morning, Whitey.
Yeah, exactly.
So how are you hearing from teachers and students? Are you getting feedback?
Oh, my God. So I elected, instead of having a Facebook group, or a separate discussion group, to just use the comments after each lesson to do the discussion about, you know, what's going on in the course. If you have questions, if you have comments, if you have answers for other students. And I've also just recently put in a survey, and the results have been more than I would ever had imagined. It's just really great to know that it's helping as many people as possible. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it seems to me like a lot of the Zoom stuff is managing expectations, because I have an 8-year-old who's gonna be 9 tomorrow, and he's
happy birthday, Ryder.
Happy birthday, Ryder.
Yes, I was in labor 9 years ago today.
Wow.
How wonderful for you.
I know. It's a great memory.
How long are you in labor?
Only 9 years, so.
Yeah.
It feels like it.
Just coming out of it.
24 hours, exactly.
Wow.
Almost to the moment.
As Rita Rudner would say, I don't even want to do something that feels good for 24 hours.
I love her.
So I love good. Her, too.
Well, I had an epidural, so I have no idea.
No idea what's going on. Okay, great. Yeah.
I had an epidural when we gave birth to our first child, too.
Perfect. I had one this morning.
So I hear like all the Zoom meetings that he's in with his class, and they do like STEAM lab, which is like science, tech, whatever.
Engineering.
With a bunch of kids.
Art.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I'm the parent of a small child, but I don't know. So I hear like all of these like 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds in the background, just like screaming, and like, you're trying to calm them down. Like the teacher has to, you know, figure out a way to talk to the kids in a way that is effective, that they learn, you know, they take away what they're supposed to from the experience. But at the same time, she's, you know, I have tremendous respect for educators, because as it is, they're dealing with a lot. Like managing small children.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And trying to teach them. I mean, like, just one kid that I have to homeschool. I'm like, how do they do it?
I know, yeah.
But
well, imagine what their life is like.
That there are certain limitations, right? Like, you may not be able to do everything that you would otherwise do.
And then there are some things that you can do that you couldn't do in real life.
Right.
So there's, you know, one of the lessons in the course is, you know, celebrating the online of online teaching, and, you know, chats in class. In class, you want to keep everybody quiet. Everybody be quiet and respectful, be quiet. But one way to engage in what is, you know, for other purposes, second screening, is to let them chat and to encourage them to chat. And the experience of a teacher that teaches kindergarten, first, second, third grade is so different from the teacher that teaches eighth, ninth, 10th grade. You know, it's just a different, because of the development of the child. Yeah. And I've had conversations with people where I've talked to them about their background and where they're standing and what kind of lens they're using and stuff. And it's very different because with little kids, you have to keep grabbing their attention with different modes of teaching. And it's like, you have to do it with some adults as well, but kids for sure, especially little kids.
So it seemed like in week one of the shutdown, my cousin sent me a video that her son's teacher had been posting daily on YouTube. This teacher got the hang of it right away, and she would post these YouTubes that were very creative, and they were inventive, and they gave kids things to do. And then she started incorporating videos that the kids sent in of themselves answering a specific question or giving a certain idea or thought, and she would edit all that together. And so for first grade, it felt like a really good idea for there to be a video that they can watch at their own speed and their own time. And rather than having everybody sitting there in a Zoom call, it seems like maybe middle school and up, but how is it really breaking down? Like, are we expecting kids to sit there and pay attention as if they're in school, or is there just content they can absorb at their own time frame?
So it depends whether or not your school has done something that actually has a name called flipping the classroom.
Okay.
When I was teaching online up for the first maybe 8 years or so, I would play back the actual PowerPoint presentation and teach the actual class every time I would hold a session. And flipping the classroom lets you record those classes, have them available for your students to watch anytime, and that way you can use the time when you get together for discovery and deep dives and experimentation and discussion, mm-hmm. peer education, feeding back to the teacher. You know, they say the easiest way to learn something is to teach somebody else how to do it.
That's what
they probably are doing with some of the stuff. And there's a couple of lessons that hasn't been uploaded yet. I told people when I started this that I'd be building the plane as I was flying it. Oh. And so there's a couple of lessons that still have to be added, but we're down to the last few. And what I'm going to show them in those lessons is how to record lessons with both a piece of software called Loom, L-O-O-M, and also one called ScreenFlow or Camtasia, which allows you to record your lessons and then have them stored somewhere so that kids can watch them whenever they want. And what I want teachers to do is to be able to get the idea that they can take these skills and maybe build their own course that they can offer the world. You know, if you're a math teacher that's also a magician, or you're a chemistry teacher who loves to cook, you know, you can create a class and a series of lessons around that by using what you're learning with Teach Your Course Online and record them rather than just hold live sessions. So mm-hmm. that's what we're trying to do.
So when you say flip the classroom, you're talking about the new practice that there's someone better than you at giving this lecture.
No.
It already exists online. So let them watch the lecture at home. And then
it's not someone better than you. It's right. You.
Oh, it's you. Okay.
You're the teacher, but you're recording the lesson rather than doing it live every time.
Okay.
I wonder if there's a curiosity both at your end and in the education world that partly out of need right now, we're doing all the Zoom stuff, but all the video and the online, et cetera, that's been going on even before the lockdown, is where these kids end up 5-10 years from now, whether yeah. this mode of education is going to produce different minds, better thinkers, not better thinkers, small attention spans, and that's something only time will tell, but what's your instinct about it?
I mean, I think it'll be one of many different things that, you know, this new normal, we don't even know what the new normal is going to be.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, education has been undergoing some really interesting striations over the last decade or so. I do audiobook narration, and one of the last books I did was a book called Leveraged Learning, which is all about how the signal strength of post-secondary education, colleges and universities, has faded tremendously over the last century, where it used to be, you go to college, you get a job. You go to college, you get a job. You don't go to college, you get a blue-collar job or something like that. today the options are so different, and the amount of money, the debt burden that it's putting on young adults who aren't guaranteed any sort of job, and then what the colleges are teaching. They, in some cases, are extraordinarily out of step with what employers want and need for the people that they're bringing in. And so the options are a lot different than they were when I was a kid, when I was growing up. It was my mom was like, you're going to college, you're going to become a doctor, blah, blah, blah. And I failed her miserably, but I did okay. And she's proud of me today. So
good.
Well, David, let's bring this back to Ryan for a second, because you are a broadcaster, an actor, a VO guy, and now you're an entrepreneur. You have an app and you have different training techniques that you market, and you're perfectly suited to do all of the above. What should Ryan know about building a career in broadcasting and maybe beyond, because we're not one thing anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all hyphenates. We're all multi-hyphenates. I would just say to Ryan and anybody else that never, ever, ever forget, if you choose to be a performer in whatever category you choose to be in, never, ever forget that no matter whether you work for a big corporation, one of the three big broadcasters, or a network, you are in charge of you incorporated. You are an entrepreneur. It doesn't matter whether you have a job and a 401k plan, and it could all evaporate tomorrow. And the side hustles that you develop today, the things that you choose to engage in and teach yourself how to do, understanding internet marketing and the fact that it's an even bigger channel these days than in real life marketing. I heard you talk when I first came on that Ryan was really well suited for doing this. And that's great, because one of the biggest hurdles that people have is overcoming this whole notion that, well, I'm a tech phobe. Computers and I don't get along. They wear like this little badge of technological dumminess.
It's a point of pride. I don't really understand why for some people.
Well, they're being defensive, and so they spin it to look like pride.
I guess that's the explanation. Yeah.
Sure. And never, never, ever lose that hair. That hair is so awesome.
I appreciate that. It's not usually this long. It's just been 2.5 months since.
Okay, you got the whole 50s bouffant thing going. It's awesome.
I'm kind of like in love with everyone's COVID hair, because you're just seeing everyone and they're just kind of like letting their hair do its natural thing. And I love it. My husband has a full beard now. He looks like Jeremiah Johnson. Google that.
Nice reference.
Yep.
Ryan and I don't know who that is.
Yeah. Now, Dina, you had some questions and you had some group discussion topics for us.
Yes. So it's interesting. We were just talking about how college education isn't kind of the path to success that it used to be. And I'm personally very interested in like trade schools, vocational schools, that kind of stuff, or kind of, you know, where... that might be the future for where a lot of people are going to get their career training.
Internet marketers creating content specifically for skills that are required at that moment. You know, who would have thought that you'd want to learn how to do certain things like launch a product online, for example? My buddy Jeff Walker has a thing called product launch formula. So if you're going to do a product, you have to know how to launch it. You have to know how to market it. You have to know how to sell it. And so
doing a lot of things ourselves.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's why, David, I think your course is you, maybe teachers are a great launch pad for you, but I just think everybody could do well with learning more about how to present themselves online. These are technical skills. Mm-hmm. And as Ryan and you both identified, there are people that get very defensive about it. But the thing with COVID is like,
that's not true.
No,
that's not true.
He's talking about me.
I can't have someone come over and help me set up lighting. I can't have someone come over and make sure that the video is still recording. We all have to learn. It's like throwing the baby into the pool or the lake, you know, she has to swim. Yeah. So I think that you could really expand this brand out to anyone who's trying to market a product go ahead.
Remember, it came from an expanded out product down to teachers.
Oh, right.
So it's going to be easy for me to take the content that I've already created and put it into the larger. And believe me, I have this unfortunate shiny butterfly thing where if something really cool comes along, I get distracted. So, you know, I mean, it's made me focus on getting a project that has really been underway for at least 2 or 3 years to get at least part of it down and ready to go. And so when this is over, a week from Friday, it's going to go from being free to the princely sum of $49.
Right.
And at some point I'll make some money on it. But you know, for right now, for me, it was the service that needed to be done. And when I looked at how teachers were suffering and I looked at how my skill set could be applied to that, it just became a no-brainer for me to do it. And I was going to start by just charging $49. I figured any teacher could afford that.
Why don't you charge $17?
Oh, because the seven pricing?
17.
Yeah,
no, 17. Exactly.
That's not enough money. It's maybe great for a suffix and a name, but it's not enough money.
Yeah. David, are you marketing to school systems so that you teachers don't have to pay for it? I don't know how much money school systems have or anything, but like it seems like it should be something that's offered to all teachers so that they're just have it accessible to them.
I haven't even begun to think about, you know, site licensing or system licensing for school systems. I just wanted to get it out there and make sure that it worked. And I think I've accomplished that. So comes in the next week and a half, I mean, I'm going to give all the teachers that have gotten it for free the ability to be affiliates for me. So if they want to tell their fellow teachers about it and they buy, they'll get 20% of whatever those teachers pay. So, you know, they tell five teachers about it and they make $50. Mm-hmm.
This is a pyramid scheme.
It's totally a pyramid
scheme. Yeah, totally. No.
It would be
the Ponzi scheme.
If on your website, you could eventually have some lessons that teachers have prepared to show examples of how people are utilizing your.
Yeah, there's a lot of things I could do, testimonials. There's a lot of things I could do to help market it, but I'm not looking at it as a marketing thing right now. I'm looking at it as sort of a being of service thing.
I know, but I think teachers would enjoy seeing how other teachers are teaching at home.
Yeah, you know,
I think so too.
If anybody ever gets to the final lesson, it's going to say, hey, take all that you've learned and shoot a quick video or take the lesson, take one of your Zoom recordings and take a clip of it. Try not to show your kids without their permission, but take a clip of it and show us what you're doing and how you went from what you did to what you are now.
So you remember, David, how disc jockeys used to send away for air checks because they were desperate to see or hear how other disc jockeys were doing their job.
My program director in D.C. was Mike Neff. Super Splice Michael Neff, who was a jingle fanatic and an air check fanatic. And I used to be a subscriber to Air Check Factory. So yeah. And when I was a kid, all I wanted to be was Don Imus and Rick Dees and you know, Cousin Brucey and
Dan Ingram. You know, Dan Ingram. I wanted to be Dan Ingram.
Yeah. Well, Dan
Cousin
Ingram,
Brucey,
you.
Cousin Brucey, Cousin Brucey, Cousin Brucey,
Cousin Brucey.
Cousin Brucey.
Hail Skidane. Keynote speech at my elementary school graduation.
Really?
Who did?
Yeah. Cousin
Who did?
Brucey.
Cousin Brucey?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Is it very inspiring?
Yeah. Totally. It changed my life. I wouldn't be here right now without
Louise, did you ever hear in Buffalo, did you ever hear Jungle J. Nelson with Chum in Toronto?
I didn't listen to Chum only because we had WKBW and that was the religious, you know, you belong to a cult and that was your job to know what Danny Nevereth had said that morning. So
right, that was our Chum.
So much. Yeah. Being a mega church pastor tempts me so much. I could not live with the guilt of doing that, but I think I could absolutely rock at that.
You'd be perfect.
Well, let's hope they're out of
business. You just need and this is not meaning to be sexist whatsoever. You need someone with really, really stunning looks standing behind you, beside you, leading their portion of the whether it's your gay partner or your straight partner. They have to be as stunning looking as you are.
Right.
And then you're done. You got it.
But Ryan, your religion doesn't have to be religion. It could be any. It could be something good. Like gardening, you know?
I could do that. I don't know if it would take off quite as well, but maybe I could make it work. Weezy, to your point about air checks, that is also something that kind of bothers me. It's not a big thing right now, and there's not a lot of young people as radio. I'm sure that's not a shock to you guys to hear. But I am the most competitive person I know, and I would have said I'm the most competitive, but I'm too competitive to say that there's anyone on my level about being competitive. I wish I knew of other young people trying to do sports radio, because I would listen to them and go in every day with the mindset that I'm going to destroy them in being so much better. And I don't have any reference point. I feel like I'm in this void where it's just me, and it's kind of uncomfortable.
Do you think a lot of young people who are doing like sports broadcasting are just like turning to podcasting instead of radio?
There's a lot of that. But a lot of people are attracted to TV too. They like the shininess of the TV. And yeah.
The whole notion of air checks is kind of quaint and anachronistic, because you don't need anybody's permission. You don't need a program director or a news director's permission to be on the air anymore.
Right.
You know, if you want to start a podcast,
yeah,
you can just go ahead and start a podcast. You don't need anybody's permission. And so this whole notion of going hat in hand and going, I'm really good on the air, would you hire me? You know, I mean, I remember a program director in Detroit, when I sent my air check from NCI in Columbus, calling me and just taking advantage of the power differential like crazy. Mm-hmm. So you sent me this thinking I would want to hire you?
No.
You know, it's wow. Like, you know, there's all these things that just don't exist anymore, because broadcasting has kind of faded. And it's still there. There's no doubt about it. There's still networks, and there's still reason to use a radio in your car, and there's still television stuff. But you're absolutely right, Ryan. The shiny butterfly of video is so much more alluring to many talent that would never dream of going and trying to get on ESPN or trying to get on a regional sports network or whatever. They've got their own following. They've got, you know, 100,000 followers on YouTube. They can make $10,000 a month. They don't need them.
And I've told Louise, I was telling her just the other day, you know, one of the things for me that I love about radio, and the reason I'm not in TV, is because for radio, it's as close as you can get to your brain as any medium. And in TV, you're a step removed. And I have to now be thinking about which camera I look at, how I'm presenting, and how I'm sitting. And all of that takes away from my ability to just let my brain flow into the microphone, which is what I love about radio. I don't have to think about anything but my words.
And it's the same for viewers and listeners too.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Good point. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, listeners can be doing other things while they're listening to you talk about what you feel about the draft and what you feel about this and commentating and so on. But with television, there's a reason why there aren't any video monitors in the front seat of cars. That play television. I mean, there's video monitors that do other things. They control the car.
A little distracting.
But it takes so much of your sensory input to be a viewer as opposed to being a listener. It's the similar equation on the consumption end of the media as well as the creation.
What were you going to say, Jamie?
Oh, what was I going to say?
Yeah.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
And then Dina.
Well, I just think that, you know, I, Ryan, I just want to say to you, you know, you say that you know, the radio is in the mind for you, but I started in radio and then it went to the stand-up stage because I felt like I had more to say than I could say on the radio, and believe it or not. And then, you know, 4 years later, here I am back doing podcasts, but it, you know, you'll evolve. Keep yourself, I mean, you've got great hair for TV, so keep yourself open to evolving.
I will.
At this stage, I'm just saying, as an old guy who's, you know, been there, done that.
Done it all.
Yeah, done it all. Nah, done it all. I haven't done it all.
Jamie, you've got a perfect face for radio.
I always did.
Dina, what do you have for me?
I just was going to say that, to David's point, that Zoom is like that as well, where now we're all looking at each other.
Right.
We're looking at ourselves in the thumbnails or the viewfinder, whatever it's called. I don't know how it is in most classrooms. I don't know if people can, like, turn off the video. I feel like that wouldn't work, because if the teacher is just, like, staring at, like, a bunch of black screens, it's just, I don't think
initials.
Well, I was going to suggest to David earlier that with the younger children, when you're doing these presentations, you can use the technology of visuals to interest them, because kids love cartoons. Yeah, yeah. The simplicity of a visual.
Mm-hmm. You could hold up your ring light and say, I see Stuart and I see Ashley.
Oh, romper room.
Yeah.
Mr. Rogers.
David, talk to us for a moment about VO Hero, some of your projects that you had previously launched, that because you're so entrepreneurial, and I just think it's interesting for Ryan to hear about all the different things that one can do in the field of broadcasting. You've got VO Heroes, and then you've got an app called Rehearsal Pro.
Yeah. So VO Heroes is my training program for voiceover talent, and I probably have five or 6,000 students that I've taught over the last 10 years. When I first came to LA, I only knew what I knew about radio and broadcasting and voiceover. I'd been doing it for about 30 years. And when I got here and I started taking acting classes and people caught wind of my demos for voiceover, I didn't realize it was such a mysterious thing for people to understand how to do not just the voice work, but also run a business as a performer, as a voiceover talent, and how to use the technology that at the time was really changing. We were moving from everybody going to cattle calls at a studio somewhere to actually getting a script in a PDF and sending back an MP3 to our agents. And it was right on that cusp when people were like, who did your demo? Your demo sounds awesome. And I'm like, well, I did. Doesn't everybody do their own demos? I mean, you know. So the first thing I did was teach people how to make demos. And then it's like, well, how do you do commercials? How do I get into animation? What do I do for narration? What is this IVR thing? Like the category of voiceover that I've made the most money in is something called IVR, which is when you call up the bank and you hear a recording. It's international. It's an interactive voice response.
Oh.
I was AOL's voice.
I was going to ask you about that, David, how you ended up being the voice of AOL customer service.
Yeah, exactly. And about 150 other stations, because when AOL stopped being the bomb, they had this huge infrastructure built to do tech support. And what they started to do was farm some of that tech support bandwidth out to other companies. So I'm also the voice of Volkswagen of America and the ABC Disney Retirement Plan and all these other companies. As the calls come into these centers across the country, none of them go to AOL anymore. Nobody's trying to figure out how to log on to AOL, but the script comes up as the phone call comes in. Thank you for calling the ABC Disney Retirement Plan. May I help you? You know, and I'm the front end. So they get mad at me before they get mad at a live person. Anyway, it's one of those areas that nobody really knows about. And so I started teaching all those things and it developed into a 39 class course. And it's kind of my flagship thing that I do between gigs. I have 7 coaches that work with me on my team. And, you know, we do a new version of it every year. And much of it now is based in audiobooks, because audiobooks is far and away the low-hanging fruit for voiceover talent. There is so much work in the world of audiobooks. It's crazy. And so that's what VO Heroes is all about.
David, can you just for fun, can you give us press one now?
Well, I can tell you how you should say it.
No, I want to hear you say it, but pretend we're not here. You're doing it on your own.
For sales, press one. For service, press two. And you always.
What are some of the key mistakes that people make?
They'll say, press two for service. Well, when somebody is trying to figure out what to press and you've already told them what to press, but you haven't told them why, they forgot which number to press. So when when people are writing those scripts, you know, they hear press one for this, press two for that. And that's not how it's done.
So there's a great,
how little retention we have.
Yeah.
There's a great job in punching up those scripts. Actually,
it's one of the services that I offer my clients. So
and what is Rehearsal Pro? Is that an app?
Yeah, so I was up for I was doing Heroes on NBC, and I was in my agent's office, and a call came in from a casting office for the show called Community. Do you remember that show with Joel McHale and Chevy Chase?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting in his office, and they wanted me to come in the next day at Paramount to do an audition for it. And my agent was like, well, he's working on set tomorrow on Heroes. What about Wednesday? This was a Monday. What about Wednesday? No, we're going to make our decision tomorrow. Listen, if you can get him down here by the end of business today, and it was like 3 p.m, we'll put him on tape. He's already been approved by the network, so we don't have to worry about that. We'll put him on tape, but he's got to get here by 5. So my normal course of action would be to go home, you know, speak the lines into my recorder and play with them over and over and over again, have them play back so that I'm off book when I go in for the, and I didn't have that luxury. I had to go right from my agent's office to Paramount. Mm-hmm. And so I recorded everything in an app called Voice Memo on my iPhone.
Right.
And all the way down the 101, I'm weaving in and out of traffic looking for the soft button on my phone that will replay it. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, there has to be an app for this.
Yeah.
And there wasn't. There was one that really sucked. And I knew that I could take what I knew about the workflow of the business and make a much better one. And now my app, Rehearsal Pro, is used by almost every television show, almost every film that you see. Some actor is using it. Directors use it.
So they
got about 70,000 users, and
lines into it, and then it plays while you're driving around or running around or whatever. It helps you learn your lines.
Correct. It does forced repetition, and then it also has a feature where you can use it as your reader when you're doing self tapes.
Right.
So it can be your other voice. So.
Oh.
Yeah, that's great.
Is it? Oh, is there a feature?
Can't get a girl up to your place to run lines with you anymore?
Yeah, you don't have to. I mean, if you can, if you have somebody that you can do that with, that's great. But most actors don't. I mean, mm-hmm. I hear actors go, I'm very fortunate because my wife is also an actor and she'll run lines with me. And but then there are people who are like, you know, sheltering in place for their whole lives. I know so many actors who are introverts or they don't want to share what they're doing with others until it's a finished product. So.
Right.
One of the things I used to do to earn my allowance as a kid, my father was an actor, is I used to run lines with him. So you just took away my living.
Great.
So sorry to hear that. Yeah.
How's a boy supposed to buy a comic book in this town?
Really?
Dina, you wanted to talk about what Trump said about Donna Reed?
Yeah.
I missed this story today. Fill us in.
About Donna Reed?
Donna Reed?
Yes. So basically, he made a comment about two reporters during one of his press conferences who he felt like were too rude and too nasty to him. And the comment that he made about them was, well, it wasn't Donna Reed. I'll tell you that. Can you do it, Danny? I can't do Trump like you do.
I'm not sure. What's the line? I'm not sure what he's saying.
He's talking about Nicole Wallace, who's like a genius.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said, it's not Donna. He said it, even though he was talking about two women. It's not Donna Reed. I'll tell you that.
It's not Donna Reed. I'll tell you that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fake Donna.
I've got to talk to this boy.
What was interesting about this is that once it started trending on Twitter, a lot of people started pointing out that Donna Reed was not, oh, by the way, Kurt Loder turned 75 today.
Happy birthday, Kurt.
Happy birthday, that Kurt.
Makes me feel old. That Donna Reed wasn't, in fact, like some kind of submissive housewife. Well, in real life, she was. I'm sorry. I'm only in my 30s. Donna Reed was her name in real life and on this show. Right.
It's the Donna Reed show.
Well, it was called the Donna Reed
Stone,
show.
And her last name was Stone on the show, and but her name was Donna in both. Do I have that right?
Yeah, and much more importantly, even if you are young, she was George Bailey's wife in It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
I've never seen
It's a Wonderful Life.
And Shelley Fabre.
Hardcore radical, right?
Shelley Fabre's played her daughter, right?
In fact, she was very politically very active, and she stood up for against the McCarthy hearings or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she wasn't. So it's funny that Donald Trump is so obsessed with image, right? And just how. What you present to the world and kind of what, like, the most superficial, outward appearance is, that he can't imagine that there's something that you could, you know, be one thing on a TV screen and a different thing completely, a much more complicated thing in real life.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. Well, yeah. There's so much to learn, and in appreciation of how much there is to learn, it is Teacher Appreciation Day, and as David has told us, it's Teacher Appreciation Week. So we're going to look at what's Twitter trending at hashtag Teacher Appreciation Day, and New York Attorney General Letitia James tweets, during this crisis, educators across New York and this nation have done what they do best, adapted to the challenges presented to them and kept on teaching. I know I speak for all New Yorkers when I say I appreciate you and I'm grateful for your hard work. Thank you. Hashtag Teacher Appreciation Day. And Mary Garofalo Patera tweets.
Wow.
Well, this is glorious. Who wants to read this?
I will teach you in a room. I will teach you now on Zoom. I will teach you in a house. I will teach you with my mouse. I will teach you here or there. I will teach because I care.
And I would like to add a verse. I will teach your mind to shine with the helpful assistance of David H. Lawrence, the 17th informative video course, Teach Your Course Online. And so I would like to thank Brian Tabb and David H. Lawrence, the 17th, for being with us today. Thank you to our panel, Jamie Alcroft and Danny Mann. Thank you to our producer, Dina Friedman. Our tech team is Thomas Hubble, Lane McFadden, Francesco Demanda, and Michael Tellep. Our sound mixer is John Maddox. Our webmaster is Bill Filipiak. I am Louise Palanker. We will see you next week. Be safe, be well, be kind.